Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal, and you are tuned into Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer. We're going to talk Ole Miss and Mississippi State coming up in the program. We'll try to enlighten and entertain and hopefully have some fun with it along the way. Logan, how are you, man?
Hey, doing good, Parrish. Kind of just wrapping things up down here in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl this week. I'm going to call it the end of my coverage and come back home to Starkville and get ready to cover some women's basketball tonight. They got a big game against Tennessee, a team that they've never beaten before. So we'll see if the Bulldogs can get it done tonight.
Well, that sounds good, man. I know you're on assignment and know you're ready to get back into your own apartment there, get back to your own bed for a little bit. So we'll talk about the Senior Bowl coming up, a little bit of MSU basketball. We'll talk some Ole Miss basketball as well. Stephon Moody made it back for the Rebels on Wednesday night, and it was noticeably different in an 80-63 Ole Miss victory against Auburn. It's amazing how different things can be, how much improvement you can show when you insert the SEC's leading scorer back into the lineup. That's not to say it was an easy game for Stephon Moody, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. Would like to tell you about some other podcasts that we need you to take a look for. Wherever you search for podcasts, look for The Memo, another production of the Daily Journal. It's our news podcast with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. A good job that those two guys are doing there. And it's all things Northeast Mississippi on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Search for The Memo. And also on Wednesdays, look for Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps covering high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. Logan and I are with you every Thursday here with Double Coverage. Logan, let's start with that Senior Bowl, man. Dak Prescott put the finishing touches on an outstanding career in the Belt Bowl, and now he's transitioning, looking ahead to the NFL, and the Senior Bowl is kind of the first step with that. Usually we'll have sometimes several players down there, but Dak Prescott, the only guy in our coverage area down there this season, is that right?
Yeah, he's actually the only player from the state of Mississippi. Of course, he's a Louisiana native, but he's the only guy from a Mississippi college. There's no Southern Miss, there's no Ole Miss, there's no Jackson State, Alcorn, any of the schools. So he's got the whole state of Mississippi on his back this week. And throughout the first two practices, he's done well. He's actually impressed me more than the other three quarterbacks that are on the roster, and that'd be Alabama's Jake Coker, Arkansas's Brandon Allen, and NC State's Jacoby Brissett, which ironically is three guys that Mississippi State played this year. So they saw all three of those quarterbacks, and Dak Prescott kind of went head-to-head with those guys, and he's going to head-to-head with them this week in practice, trying to earn that starting job for Saturday's Senior Bowl. And he had a better day on day one than day two. He really impressed on day one, had a great day. Day two, they kind of shuffled him around in the lineup. He took first-team reps the first day, took fourth-team reps on the second day, and some receivers dropped some balls for him on day two and kind of had an inconsistent day there. But day one, very impressive. Very few balls hit the ground for him. Surprisingly, he received his playbook on Monday night and had practice at 1:15 on Tuesday afternoon. So not a whole lot of time for a quarterback to learn an offense, but he had a great day on Monday with just a few hours to kind of learn things. One of the things that Dak said, and even some NFL guys that I've talked to, they want to see him transition from the spread offense that he played in high school and in college to a pro-style offense, taking snaps from under center. And that's one of the things he's done pretty well at this year. I talked to Greg Olson, the offensive coordinator from the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he's been actually Dak's position coach this week during practice. And he said he was really amazed with his ability. He likes his leadership skills And he said that Dak's done everything that they've asked him to do at a very high level this week so far in practice. So we'll have to see if that transitions into game day on Saturday. But you know from covering this last year too, Parrish, that it's not just about what happens out there on that practice field. It's about the meetings with all these NFL teams and, you know, the connections that they make down here in Mobile. And talking with Dak late Tuesday afternoon, he said he had already met with over half of the NFL teams and had some more meetings scheduled Tuesday night with them. So he's going to probably have 3/4 of the NFL covered by the end of the day on Wednesday. So a lot of teams are interested in Dak Prescott. We'll just have to wait until, I guess, till April to find out which team really likes him the most.
Well, are there any down there right now that have expressed more interest than others? I'm sure a lot of people are, have expressed a little bit of interest, but has anyone spent more time with him, I guess, than other teams?
He hadn't tipped his hand. I tried to get him to talk a little bit more about it, and you know, he kind of played it casually. He did tell me that he grew up a Cowboys fan, and that's one of the teams that he had spoken with. And but ironically, the Cowboys are coaching staff is coaching the North team this week. So he said he's not a Cowboys fan this week, but grew up one, and that's a place, you know, he would like to play just for those ties. But you know, knowing Dak, whatever team gets him is going to get a strong leader, and he's going to give 110% to that team, just like he did at Mississippi State for 5 years.
How comfortable is Dak when he does go under center?
He's getting used to it. You know, that's one of the things he's really worked on. He said he's been down in Orlando since the Belk Bowl, working with a quarterback coach down there. He actually worked with John Gruden a little bit while he was down there in Orlando, too. So that's one of the things he's been working on, working from under center. I only saw him go under center just a handful of times during the 5+ years that he was at Mississippi State. So it's really weird to see him going up under center primarily down here in Mobile. But he knows that's one of the things he's got to get better at. He talked about his athleticism. You know, that's one of the things that a strong suit for him. And he's been able to, you know, get up under center. He can move around in the pocket and stuff. So he's been, you know, working on his drops as a quarterback, working on those steps to hand the ball off to running backs too. And, you know, hadn't seen any balls hit the ground or anything. So I guess that's the positive.
Well, I covered the Senior Bowl last year, Logan. And when we say cover the Senior Bowl, we're talking primarily about the practices. You know, that's kind of while the game is important, you know, so much more gets done in the practices when guys really have a chance to get more reps and more evaluation. I think there are some NFL people that don't even hang around for the game. But I was down there for a couple of practices last year. We had more people in the game last year, Cinquez Golson and Cody Pruitt from Ole Miss, and then three from State with Preston Brown and Dylan Day. And I believe Caleb Ewells was there. Isn't that right last year? Does that sound right?
Actually, there was four from Mississippi State. Blaine Clausell got added late, and it's Preston Smith. Preston Brown's the pitcher from Mississippi State.
Well, Preston Brown was not at the Senior Bowl. Yeah. It was Preston Smith. That's right.
Yeah, he was probably working on the mound back at Duty Noble Field during that time. But, yeah, Preston Smith, who was one of the top rookies in the NFL for the Washington Redskins this past year. So, you know, all four of those guys from Mississippi State. We actually had six players, so you were a lot busier than I am down here. I only had one player.
Yeah, so busy I couldn't remember everybody, you know. So
exactly.
I do remember running around from person to person and NFL coaches and scouts and getting different opinions. It's fun. It's interesting to get in that different kind of setting. You know, we cover the colleges and we cover them hard and do a lot of things, and then all of a sudden you're in a different type of environment when it's the NFL. It was very good weather last year, Logan. It was sunshine and some days in the 70s a couple of times. So what was your weather like down there this week?
Well, it's been raining and it's been cold. One day it was Tuesday it rained mostly the whole day, and rained hard Tuesday night. And it brought, with that hard rain, it brought some cold weather in on Wednesday. So it was pretty cold out there covering practice on Wednesday. One of the cool things is, you know, since I've only got one player to cover down here, I've spent a lot of time with Dak Prescott down here. And he's a guy that I've known since he was a junior in high school. So, you know, got a pretty good relationship with him. And you know, it was really cool just to have those one-on-one moments with him down here, you know, just kind of reestablish a connection with him that I shared, you know, during recruiting and stuff. We talked a lot of stuff off the record and stuff, and, you know, kind of proud to see a guy that you've known for that long have the success that he's had, build a name for himself. I mean, I knew him before he was the big man on campus, and, you know, talked to him about what it was like, you know, just being that popular. I mean, he couldn't really go anywhere in Starkville, you know, without people wanting to run up to get pictures and autographs or anything. He kind of just had to live in a shell. You know, if he wanted to go out, you know, he knew it was going to take twice as long to get whatever it is he needed to get done away from the house, because people were just constantly coming up to him. And actually went to a fan event last night at a barbecue joint here in Starkville. I mean, in Mobile, and there was probably 150 people in there lined up to get autographs and pictures taken with Dak. And you know, he was pressed for time. Like I said, he had all those NFL meetings that he had to get to, but to Dak's credit, he sat there and signed everything that people brought up. And, you know, as soon as the last autograph was signed, he headed out the door and was off to other things. But that's just the type of person that he is.
Well, shifting gears a little bit, signing day, Logan, right around the corner. Ole Miss picked up a couple of important commitments this week in offensive lineman Royce Newman and wide receiver Trey Nixon, as they continue to round out a class that's really pretty highly rated as signing day approaches. Ranked number 3 by Rivals right now, and ranked number 3 in the 247 sports composite rankings as well. Newman is the sixth offensive lineman in this class, and you know they're really hoping to find the next Laramie Tunsil here, and they think they have it in Greg Little, the 5-star offensive tackle out of Allen, Texas. So still a lot of buzz about this Ole Miss group right now, a lot of momentum as signing day comes into view. There's some question right now appears to be about the running back Devon Penniman out of Marvell, Texas. If they land him, he's a 4-star guy according to Rivals. If they get him, you know, he has a chance to come in as a bigger back than Hugh Freeze has signed right out of high school. You know, Ole Miss has constantly been in search of that bigger back, somebody who can come in and break tackles and gain some yards after contact. And, you know, and actually at the end of last season, Akeem Judd and Jordan Wilkins were running hard and were breaking tackles and were getting those yards after contact. But if they sign Penniman, and here's the catch, Logan, if the recruiting height and weight is somewhat correct, you know, that's always a little bit of a sketch itself. But, you know, right now on some things that I've read about him, I've seen him listed at 5'10", 221. If you get a guy coming in at 221, you're going to add weight to these guys. They're going to get in the conditioning and the strength program, and you're going to add to that frame. And, you know, if you're adding to 221, it's not a stretch to get up to 230. And then all of a sudden you start talking about that size of the really great power backs that we've seen in the SEC in, you know, this past season with Derrick Henry at Alabama, Leonard Fournette at LSU. I mean, when you start talking 230 and perhaps beyond, I mean, that's the kind of range that you're getting into. So an interesting situation to keep an eye on regarding Devon Penniman and the Ole Miss recruiting. We'll see how that plays out. Basketball, I mentioned this at the top of the program. It was good for Ole Miss to have Stephon Moody back against Auburn. He scored 24 points in the Rebels' 80-63 win on Wednesday night. But it wasn't easy, and it was a little bit different kind of Moody game. Not different in the sense that he was knocking down three-pointers. He was 6-for-12 from the arc, and we've seen him do that before. But that's a little more inconsistent part of his game than getting in the lane and getting to the free throw line. That's something that he does so well. And in SEC play, before the Auburn game, he was averaging 11 free throw attempts per game, and he got to the line only 5 times against Auburn. Hit 4 for 5 from the free throw line, but 3 of those came when he was fouled on a three-pointer. So Stephon Moody was clearly favoring the hamstring more in the first half than in the second. You know, he pulled up in the South Carolina game with 5 minutes left and was in obvious pain, missed the Mississippi State game. So Auburn was his first game back. And, you know, there were some times in the first half when he was grabbing at the hamstring, and it was really noticeable around the middle of the first half. There was a play, there was a loose ball or a pass, I forget which, but it was the ball was way out in front of Moody, and he was in the open floor. And it's a situation where many times we've seen him go and chase down that ball and then go dunk or get a layup or just some easy basket. But on this particular occasion, he just kind of pulled up and let the ball go out of bounds. So favoring that hamstring a little bit there. And in the second half, it looked like it loosened up as he shot. Bruce Pearl, the Auburn coach, said Andy Kennedy did a good job of making adjustments at halftime to the defensive plan that that Auburn had for Moody, and that was a lot of switching off the ball screens. Kennedy put Moody in position for some better shots in the second half, according to Bruce Pearl. Whatever it was, if Stephon Moody was favoring that hamstring a little bit in the first half and it was keeping him from driving and getting to the rim, it was not keeping him from elevating and knocking down three-point shots. 5 for 7 from three-point range in the second half. So a big night for Moody shooting. As I said, 6 for 12 from three-point range. He was 7 for 14 overall, so just 1 for 2 from inside the three-point circle. Just 2 shots there. One of those was a mid-range jumper early in the game that he missed, and the second one was late in the game when he did move past an Auburn defender and get all the way to the rim for a layup. So a different night for Moody, a really kind of gutsy performance. Would love to have heard him talk about it after the game, but he was not ushered into the media room quickly enough, and he kind of ducked out, Logan, as players do sometimes. you know, players, it's not always the highest thing on their priority list to make sure they get to the media room and visit with us. So we didn't get to ask Stephon Moody personally how his hamstring felt, but clearly it was big for Ole Miss to have him back, and the Rebels were able to break a 4-game losing streak with the win over Auburn. And I'll tell you, Logan, Auburn has really struggled in SEC road games. They've got a couple of nice home wins, one against Kentucky, one against Alabama. But going into Oxford, this Auburn team had lost 3 other SEC road games by an average margin of 21.6 points. Then they lose by 17 against Ole Miss. It wasn't that way from start to finish. They were out of the game early at Florida, but Auburn actually led Ole Miss 30-29 at halftime Wednesday night. The Rebels missed their last 8 shots in the first half. In addition to Moody coming back, Martavius Newby was back as well, and that gave Ole Miss a lift on the glass. The Rebels were -3 on the glass in the first half, but +10 in the second half. Newby had 9 rebounds, and Marcanvis Hyman, who has been a consistent rebounder, was again with 10, but he was another story of the night with a double-double with 19 points and 10 rebounds, and just looked much more comfortable offensively. In his first 2 games as a starter, in the absence of Sebastian Saiz, who is recovering from surgery to repair a detached retina, in his first 2 starts, Hyman was just 3 for 9 from the floor each time. Well, against Auburn, he went 6 for 8, and he also shot free throws better. He was 7 for 11 from the free throw line to finish with 19 points and 10 rebounds. Kennedy talked about that after the game, and he talked about just putting Hyman in position, in better position, to be successful. At Mississippi State, we saw a guy who would occasionally try and put the ball on the floor and try to manufacture some offense. Well, they changed his positioning on the floor, got him more looks where he could just catch and shoot, catch and make one quick move to the rim, and that made a big difference against Auburn. Hyman looked a lot more comfortable and strong with the right hand, and that was good news for Ole Miss to see him finish at the rim. And another guy who continues to play well for Ole Miss is Dante Fitzpatrick Dorsey, just looking very steady right now. He had 16 points against Mississippi State. He had 8 points against Auburn. He shot the ball less. 6 points. He was 3 for 3 from the floor. Shot the ball less. That's not surprising because more of those shots were going to Moody. Fitzpatrick Dorsey played 18 minutes, so he and Moody were on the floor together at times. But this is a guy who continues to grow and look more comfortable. And certainly he's become an important role player this season, but he's such an important part of Ole Miss basketball for the future. He'll benefit next season from all the experience he is gaining right now as a freshman. So Ole Miss basketball right now, after breaking the 4-game losing streak, improves to 13-7 overall, 3-5 in the SEC, and they're getting ready for the SEC Big 12 Challenge. They will travel Saturday to Kansas State, where they'll take on the Wildcats in a 1 o'clock tip on ESPNU. I know you didn't get a chance to see State live this week, but I don't think you even got a chance to see him on TV Tuesday night, did you? I watched most of that game. I probably know more about that South Carolina game than you do.
Yeah, I was just kind of following along on Twitter and looking at the box score and reading some stuff afterwards. I actually thought I'd get a chance to catch the second half. Tuesday night was the Senior Bowl media night down here. So I went down downtown Mobile to talk to Dak for a little while, hung out with him, had a good meal, some seafood, fresh seafood down there, and made it back to the hotel. Thought, you know, it was about halftime when I arrived. Thought I would have a chance to catch the second half. And lo and behold, my hotel does not have the SEC network. So I was kind of locked out and missed that ball game. So I just had to kind of follow along with what happened. Sounded like there was a lot of fouls in that game. There was 32 called on Mississippi State, 25 called on South Carolina. So it was a lot of whistles being blown in that game. But, you know, Mississippi State lost another close one. Obviously, it's 84-74 loss to a South Carolina team that was ranked in one poll, on the fringe of being ranked in the other poll. Just had a hard time handling Michael Carrera, it sounded like. A guy scored 34 points and had 15 rebounds. That's a heck of a ball game right there. But the two freshmen continue to play well for Mississippi State, Quindary Weatherspoon and Malik Newman. Both of those guys, since Quindary Weatherspoon started or joined the starting lineup, I guess, about 4 games ago, he's just been unbelievable for Mississippi State, playing out of position. He's normally a shooting guard, and he's playing power forward for Mississippi State. So very undersized, but he's continually to give them points and hustle rebounds and stuff. It's he's been really more impressive all around this season than even a higher touted recruit like Malik Newman has. But Malik Newman, the last 2-3 games, has really come on, and he's really found his stroke from the outside. The other night he was, he was 5 of 8 from 3-point range. I mean, that's pretty good. And he shot the ball extremely well against Ole Miss on Saturday too. Mississippi State's got another road game. They're actually going to visit both Columbias in the SEC this week. They visited Columbia, South Carolina Tuesday night, and they're going to hit up Columbia, Missouri on Saturday. So Mississippi State's playing well. It's kind of been the story of their SEC season. They're playing with all of these teams. They're taking them right down to the wire. Just haven't been able to find a way to win. They did find a way to win this past Saturday against Ole Miss. Ben Howland picked up his first SEC win. But, of course, that was without three of Ole Miss's best players, and obviously the SEC's leading scorer in Stephon Moody. So a little shorthanded for Ole Miss, but it led to good results for Mississippi State to kind of get that monkey off their back and get an SEC victory.
Hey, folks, I'd like to share an interview with you now that I was able to have earlier in the week with Tom Lemming, a national recruiting analyst who works with CBS Sports Network. I'll go ahead and make a little correction for you right now. When you hear this, you're going to hear that he has Shea Patterson, the Ole Miss quarterback commit, rated around number 20 or 21 overall. That's those were some earlier ratings. That has since been updated, and Lemming has Shea Patterson rated the number 7 overall prospect and the number 2 quarterback, a 5-star commit, a very important part of this Ole Miss class. Here is Tom Lemming. I'm joined now by Tom Lemming, co-host of the Lemming Report on CBS Sports Network. Just all things college football recruiting. You can see his top 100 at TomLemmingPrepFootball.com. Tom, I know you're traveling today, man. Thanks for being with us. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Doing great, Paris.
Listen, have a few questions for you. Wanted to talk about this Ole Miss class a little bit. Number one, just tell me, what do you think about this group that Hugh Freeze is putting together right now?
Well, right now they're a top 5 class, which you can't be better than that, really. So you're doing a great job. And Hugh Freeze is one of those guys who is a great recruiter. I knew him from our blindside days with Michael Orr at high school, and he was always a go-getter. He was a guy that was innovative and personable. So he knew he was going to be a good recruiter, and Ole Miss has always been a bit of a sleeping giant, having a great state like Mississippi for talent and being so close to Memphis. So it was always right there. And you put it all together, and not to knock the other guys, because Houston Nutt's one of my co-hosts on my TV show, and I always thought Houston was a great coach, too. But I do think that Hugh knows how to put things together, both coaching-wise and recruiting. And it is a two-edged sword in college football. And I would have to say less than 50% of the head coaches realize it when it comes to recruiting, or they just don't want to put the effort in, because it really nowadays takes even more effort than it has ever done in the history of college football to recruit great players, particularly in the conference that Ole Miss is in, the Southeast Conference, where it just lights out. And a couple of years ago, I said on our air to Rick Neuheisel, show me a coach who's a prolific golfer, and I'll show you a lousy recruiter. And it's kind of true. Recruiting has to be your hobby if you're going to be successful, and it's certainly Hugh Freeze's hobby.
Now, Hugh has told me before that he believes that he works as hard or harder than any other head coach at recruiting. And you talk about this as a hobby and whatnot, but to what sets these guys apart after the plan is in place? When you go to execute a recruiting plan, where does the head coach step in, and how important is he in closing the deal?
It's phone calls, because now with limited time to be out on the road, you can call players. I remember Leonard Fournette, who was at LSU now, who was in his high school as a sophomore, because I go visit most of the top 2,000 kids every year in person in their hometown. So sitting in his office with him, at the office with him and his coach there at St. Augustine in New Orleans, and Nick Saban called. And this is while he's a sophomore, called the coach. So did Lane Kiffin while he was at USC. And they were calling because they wanted Leonard to call them on a weekly basis. And that's going above and beyond. You're talking to sophomores. You're not allowed to call them, but they're certainly allowed to call you. And that's time and effort. And a lot of guys are not willing to put that kind of time and effort into recruiting. They've already got enough time in the coaching, film watching, talking to ball players. And a lot of coaches just don't have the patience and the time to do that. That's what sets them all apart. Nick Saban's the best in the country. There's no question about it. He's had 5 recruiting titles in a row, possibly could be 6. I am number 11 now, but they're in a good position to land some big name stars by this time next week. And I believe that when you talk about the younger guys, I think Hugh Freeze has that kind of potential, along with Dabo Sweeney and Jim Harbaugh, and of course Urban Meyer, who's also in that same category when it comes to spending an awful lot of time on the phone with prospects.
You mentioned Ole Miss as a sleeping giant. What are the factors that has the giant part of that equation? I mean, what's helping Hugh along the way here?
I just think they got great facilities. I'm friends with Fred Smith, who's the CEO of FedEx, and Fred's taken me a couple of times on campus and shown me around the buildings, the campus life, during games, too, obviously, walking through the Grove, and they've got the enthusiasm of the fans. This is also while they weren't doing very well in 2009 or so. They were doing okay, but not great. But they certainly have the fan base. And I said, they've got a state like Mississippi where there's an enormous amount of talent, and really Mississippi State, you don't really count Southern Miss as a team that could beat them head-to-head. Then you got Memphis close. You're not that far away from Atlanta or Louisiana, where there's an awful lot of other top players. So you're sitting pretty, as opposed to other powers like Nebraska or Iowa, who really have no talent at all around them. So the natural resources are there. It's just a matter of selling your brand, which is making Ole Miss too tough to turn down locally, and then you spread your wings and you go nationally. That's usually how it works. And Ole Miss has done that now. They are recruiting effectively nationally. Just the last couple of years before that, they had a lot of trouble going after A-list guys against Florida and Florida, or Georgia and Georgia, or Alabama and Auburn, and Alabama or LSU and Louisiana. Now I think that they've got a big enough name and a big enough brand where their name means, look at, they came to Chicago and got one of our top players, Laquon Treadwell. And I remember I brought Laquon out for a TV show we're doing with Chicago White Sox, because Adam Dunn was one of my All-Americans, and at the time, a couple years ago, he was playing for the White Sox. And I remember at the time he told me he was leaning into Michigan. All of a sudden he winds up going to Ole Miss, pretty far away from Chicago, but enough where Ole Miss had already set the tone to get him and Kim Dichie and several other top-notch players that year.
Well, is that where the effort of the head coach comes into play? Because, I mean, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, this is a new day for Ole Miss to recruit nationally on the level that it is right now. And is that strictly about the effort that the head coach puts in and the plan?
I think it's a combination. I think it's a collective effort, not only with the head coach or the assistant coach. I know Crime Dog McGriff was one of the guys that was really in on, he's gone now, but he was in on Laquon Treadwell a lot. He came, I have a banquet every year I do at Soldier Field with the top 50 players in Illinois from freshmen to seniors. We always have, I think that year we had Brady Hoke speaking, the Michigan head coach at the time, and he was there. He was there at the banquet just because he was recruiting Laquon Treadwell. He was also recruiting a tackle who eventually wound up at LSU, but that was the reason why he was there. So I think a collective effort, not only with the head coach and the assistant coach, is all got to be on the right page. A lot of times assistant coaches, particularly coordinators, spend a lot of time looking for other jobs rather than recruit. But when the head coach sets the law down and sets the example that he's on the road, he's talking to these ball players, these guys better do it. That's when you have a collective effort like Alabama has and like Ohio State has every year, where they're all speaking as one, all 10 coaches.
Well, let me ask you about some of the players in this class and some players that Ole Miss is still trying to land late in the process. Greg Little, the offensive tackle from Texas, you have him as your number six player. What do you see in him as a true freshman? Obviously, Ole Miss has a need at left tackle.
Yeah, he's got the ability. He's a super athlete. I'm going to Allen, Texas, this game as a sophomore, junior, and a senior. And I remember the coaches this summer, because you remember they had a big-time tackle last year as a senior when Greg was a junior. And I remember the coaches talking about Greg being the man, even though he was a year behind the other one. He turned out to be that way. When you look at him, he's got super long arms, the quick feet. He looks thin at about, not quite 300 pounds. When I saw him this year, he was 290. And he'll be 310 to 330 in a year or so at Ole Miss. And he's qualified. Same kind of talent that Michael Orr was to come in and play left tackle for Ole Miss. But I think that Little's got technique down. He's well coached. Allen is a powerhouse of a high school where they have as many coaches as the colleges do. So he's been well coached and well groomed, and he's a guy that can step in right away.
Ole Miss is still trying to fill some needs along the defensive line. Obviously, they love to land Rashawn Gary, Kobe Jones, Terrell Hall, Jeffrey Simmons are some other names that keep coming up. How do you think the Rebels finish at this position?
I saw Jeffrey Simmons back in October. At the time, he might have been leaning slightly at Mississippi State over Alabama Ole Miss, but still it was early, and Tennessee was involved, so you never know with him, but there might be Rashawn Gary could be a big stretch, but you never know. He's announcing on my show, my signing day show on CBS Sports Network next Wednesday. And he's been to the studio a few times, and he's very tough to get anything out of. So everything now is speculation that he's leaning to Michigan. He has never said a word. His mom and his youth, and he's got a life coach, too, that's never said a word either. So you just never know. Terrell Hall is talking to him and his coach over the past several weeks. Mississippi is right there. Maryland has lost a couple of their superpower players to Ohio State the last week. So they're reeling because they thought they could use those guys to help them get Terrell Hall. Alabama, Florida State, Florida. Yeah, they're all kind of still involved. But Ole Miss is right in the middle of it. I would say at the least 50-50, so they have a good shot with Terrell.
How do you see Ole Miss in its recruiting of Mike Juarez, the linebacker?
You know what? I love this kid. I pick the Butkus Award every year for the top high school linebacker. He was one of the three finalists, him and Ben Davis and Kelly, who I gave it to, Caleb Kell out of Fresno, California. The Juarez, actually, if you combined everything, he would have won the award hands down. He was a great offensive force, too. He runs a 4.5. There's no doubt in my mind he'll be a number one draft choice in a few years. He is a dynamic ball player, a great kid. And with Mick, he was a diehard USC fan growing up. That's why he'd been committed to them so long until they fired their coach. And that left him wide open with four. USC still in the, never ruled them out. UCLA is right there. Obviously Ole Miss. BYU because he's a Mormon. And Alabama, just because they're Alabama, they're in on everybody. So, again, none of these kids are revealing their hand right now. And it's all going to come down to signing day. But Ole Miss is sitting pretty with a lot of big-time ball players.
You have Shea Patterson listed as the number 120 as the number 21 player overall and the number 4 quarterback. That's lower than some other folks have him listed. What do you see with Shea?
Well, I like him. It's still he's in my top 25, which means he's a great ball player. But what I see with Shea is a guy that he's got a great arm, and I think Ole Miss will develop him, and I think he has a chance to be a number one draft pick. And it's apples and oranges with all the quarterbacks. Felipe Franks, I thought, had the highest ceiling of all of them. Throws a 93-mile fastball, like 6'6", runs a 4.5. Not quite as developed as Patterson or Eason yet. But I think Patterson, going to IMG, has really picked up his game. He's obviously 9-0 playing with an all-star team. And he'll be doing the same when he gets to Ole Miss, so it won't be much of a difference with Shea. So I saw Shea when he was in Louisiana as a sophomore and as a junior. Really liked him. He's a great kid. Comes from a very athletic family. He's an outstanding baseball player himself. And I think overall, he's going to be a redshirts next year. Could be a 3-4-year starter for sure for Ole Miss.
How mobile is he? I've just seen a little bit of the clips, but, I mean, obviously his great arm. How mobile is Shea?
He's got good mobility. All the guys that had ranked high, you know, nowadays you got to rank them with mobility if they're going into college because there's so many spread offenses right now. But I believe that Shea can move. He's not on speed, so he's probably like a 4.7 to 4.8 guy in reality. If you notice, everybody kind of hedges on their 40 time. When you watch him on film, he's able to move around the pocket. He's able to throw the ball while on the run. And he's able to tuck and run when forced to. But I think he's more comfortable throwing the ball.
Let me ask you about a couple of guys from the 2015 class. I know Ole Miss is adding some wide receivers right now, but they redshirted Van Jefferson last year. They played DeMarcus Lodge in one game. How do you see those two guys impacting Ole Miss in the coming season, I guess, and just for their careers as the Rebels transition away from Laquan?
Well, they're both big-time guys. I had them both. I had Hodges, a five-star ball player. When I saw him in the state championship game, I actually pulled in. I was driving from Phoenix to Dallas, and they were showing a rerun of the game on TV in my hotel room, and I watched the whole game. And I already had him ranked real high, but it just kind of confirmed what a great talent he is. And I think both of them have the ability to become game breakers. You know, not getting a whole lot of chance when you've got a guy like Quan Treadwell on your team. But this coming year, you're going to see them both break out. I'd be surprised if either if both of them don't turn out to be stars immediately.
That was Tom Lemming, a national recruiting analyst with the CBS Sports Network, and you have been listening to Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Also, check out our news podcast, The Memo, and our high school sports podcast called Prep Rally. Just look for those where you search for your podcast. Lots of good things there from the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. This is Parrish Alford and signing off for Logan Lowry. Thanks for being with us, folks. Come back and join us next week.